Options Podcast.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Dialogue Options Podcast. I'm your host, Karen Morrison, and I've actually got a special guest co-host with me that I've brought back up because it's been a while since he's been on the show. That is Brendan Hill. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right, Karen. Thank you very much.
Yeah, it's good to have you back. Obviously, Joel was out doing some family man life stuff, so he'll be absent, I think, for the next few episodes. So I'm just calling in anyone who, you know, plays games to come and talk games with me. And there's a particular game that came out recently that I talked about with Joel on our last episode, but you're the man that I feel like a lot of our friends, all right, they have a franchise or a game. You can just, like, stick to them.
They can categorize them neatly.
That button there, yeah. that's your game, and yours is Dragon's Dogma.
And mine is... It's unfortunately Dragon's Dogma.
Hey man, recently, you got a second one?
Yeah, I got a second one. It's been pretty good. Pretty good. Deep down, I always knew I wanted another Dragon's Dogma.
Deep down, I get it. Again, we're just going to do that. It's going to be no bonus round or anything. It's just going to be pure quest log. So much so that I'm not even going to put a bumper in, honestly. Sorry, it's a pretty slapdash episode, but I was feeling under the weather last week, so that's why there wasn't one this week, and now we're back. I wouldn't say I'm feeling 100% because I'm tired. As I'm sure you are as well. Yeah, it's been a big back half of a week. We both had gigs on. You had a full-on work day. So adult life, once again, just doing its thing and slowly crushing us.
Yeah, just like between the vice. A little bit more of a turn.
But luckily we have games that reward us and don't punish us too hard, like Dragon's Dogma 2.
Dragon's Dogma 2. Hey, wait, that game does punish you.
It does. That's what I was getting at. So... If anyone listened to the last episode, I was talking a lot about the ups and downs that I'd been having whilst playing it, whilst keeping it pretty light on going too in-depth, but I feel like the game's been out for a while now, so it's a good time to have Brendan on here, who's... You played a lot of Dragon's Dogma, like original.
Like OG Dragon's Dogma, I played a lot and of Dark Dragon's Arisen. Dogma. And Dark Arisen, yes.
I did not, on the other hand. I did not finish it, but you got the Platinum?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I did. Yeah. There is stuff in Dark Arisen. Yeah, I got the Platinum on PS3. I went back on PS4. I think I got 3/4 of it. And I was like, I'm back in Bitter Black Isle again. This is really hard.
Yeah. So, yeah, you're a perfect person to bring on to talk about it because we've both put a sizable amount of time into this game now.
Yeah.
I don't want to say we've explored most of the map, but there's less Fog of War on my map now.
I have no idea where I'm at in the story.
So that's something that I really want to start us off with saying, because that's a really good point. Yeah. I have no idea. It seems like the entire basis of the story is gathering evidence.
I guess.
Yeah. To... overthrow the person who's pretending to be the Arisen. That's all I can take away so far.
Yeah, I mean, I assume that the theory is that, like, well, if you're entitled to be the king, everyone would want to.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, what if I would just want to backflip off ogres? Like, no, not an option, all right?
Jeez. Yeah, because the story starts you off in this capital city, like Vermouth, I think, or Vernmount or something. Like, it's not
Vermund,
good,
but
Vermont. I was close. I had the first few letters, you know. I don't know what I was thinking of Vermouth for.
Capital Vermouth.
But yeah, so you start off there, and it does. You've got this general, this captain of the guard, who's sort of he's in your corner, and he's just sort of giving you these quests, but send you one of his weird little errands. But just like, okay, I guess I'll do it. I'm not sure what I'm really building towards here.
Yeah.
And then you go back to me, and you tell him, he's like, all right, I'll keep that in mind. But also, go check this out. You're like, all right, I guess I will.
Yeah. I'll do the second thing. I think that a compelling narrative through line is not the calling card of this series.
No. And I gotta say, like, I'm not saying this like it's a negative, because like what you're coming to this game for is to just sort of run around the world of Dragon's Dogma.
Yeah.
And just get and just laugh at your pawns, I guess.
And genuinely feel like the main character.
Yeah, and you are the main character.
You're the main character. And it's clear, and a lot of other people realize it's clear as well.
Like, that's why all the pawns basically obey only you, and every pawn you run in onto the road is just like, hey, you should definitely hire me.
Yeah.
They'll just stop you sometimes and be like, hey, this is what I bring to the table. I'm like, whoa, I've already got a full party. Okay, I'm good.
Did you know I'm excellent with curatives?
You'll never fall
down while I'm around. I'm sorry, just don't avert your gaze.
I speak Elvish. Okay, that's great, but only really useful in a very small area.
But you know what? I'm going to bookmark you for later.
We'll circle back on you.
A business card exchange and away we go.
The star of this game really is just, and again, I said this to Joel when I was talking about it, but just being in the world. How have you found exploration and the combat and stuff? Just going from point A to point B, which is what a lot of this game is. Yeah. And it sort of explains why there is no... I mean, there is a fast travel of sorts. You can spend money and get... I think the DLC, the microtransactions are one purchase only.
Yeah, okay.
So I think you can only get those occasionally. But, you know, you can buy fairy... You can also get fairy stones in-game to sort of bamf around. And then there's the ox carts and all that.
Yeah.
But generally, the game is nudging you to sort of walk from point A to point B. Yeah. And how are you finding that?
Honestly, it's... Aside from the parts where sometimes you have a quest that will send you from the capital to this other village, and then someone there wants to go for a walk, and you're like, yeah, okay, let's go for a walk, I'll accept this. And you take them for a walk, and then you have to go back to that village again, and then they give you a quest to go back to the capital, and then that quest resolves back at the village, and you've just done that same trek about 8 times in a row. That happened to me once, and I was just like, I think I've had enough for today.
Yeah.
But the rest of it... I really like it. Like, I really like just getting in the world, going for a run, seeing what you find, seeing what's going to happen to you today. Like, are you going to have skeletons? Are you going to have saurians? Are you going to, like, is there going to be a griffin out of just friggin' nowhere? Just decides to show up and wreck your day.
Or a dragon.
Or a dragon.
Could be a dragon.
Could potentially be a dragon.
If you're me, it's almost always a dragon.
It's mostly a dragon.
Exclusively a dragon. Yeah, especially, and as you mentioned, like, it is going out. And just experiencing the world, like you sometimes will have a nice peaceful walk.
Yeah,
might have the odd encounter, but sometimes you'll see a shadow just fly, like just pass across the ground. Yep. You're like, well, there's nothing near me, so that's clearly it's a griffin.
It's for me.
And it's circled and it's diving.
Yeah, and here we go. There is the one of the great best things the game does in with the griffin encounters and with the dragons later on is that they will flee when they get too damaged. They will just like bail on you. So they become like, oh, you little bastard, you come back here.
I'm not done with you.
Just like, oh, thank God it's running. And then it was like, oh, okay, I can scare this thing off and it'll go down to, oh, I nearly had him. And as you increase the table swings a little bit. And when you finally get them to stick around long enough, like you've downed a dragon. I haven't played enough to actually manage to take down a dragon yet.
I don't know if I was meant to. It took me like, it was like a 30-40 minute fight. I was at it. It took some time. And I'll be honest, the last third of it was mostly me just chugging my wake stones to revive myself.
Yeah.
Because it just had an attack. We'll be like, yeah, I've deleted you. I'm like, oh, cool. Okay, I guess I'll get up. It's like, I've done it again. I'm like, all right, cool.
Yeah.
Good move, honestly. Yeah.
And then you sunk cost because you're too far in that fight to now not wake stone yourself.
Finish it.
Like, what, are you going to spend this incredibly precious resource or just burn 30 minutes of real life?
Yeah.
Like, another precious resource.
Yeah. Ah, oh, dragon. As something you mentioned also when the enemy, sometimes the monsters can flee. I actually... finally managed to make it happen where I was in Batal, like the summit, the deserty sort of region. The griffin fled.
Yeah.
And I actually managed to grab its tail as it was leaving. And it flew me back to its nest, which ended up being pretty anticlimactic because it was where that guy wants you to go.
I think. Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Because is that a griffin he wants you to get to petrify for him? Yeah.
Yep.
So that's that griffin. I like rode it over there. I'm like, oh, hey, this nest looks familiar. Better run.
Yeah.
But I also did find the other, because there's a griffin nest in there and there's a griffin nest in the northern region as well. I found that one too because I wanted that. There's a port crystal in there.
Oh, all right.
So it's worth tracking that one down. Port crystals, of course, are just a useful item, but there's a finite amount of them in the game, but you can basically plop those down anywhere on the map and basically make a fast travel point to use your fairy stones to teleport to.
Which, I say, Dragon's Dogma 1, that was, I don't know whether that's been done before, but to me that was revolutionary in like a 3D open world RPG game.
Just like
game.
Making your fast
Make
travel point.
Make your own fast travel point. Yeah, they're not commonly available. I think there's 2 in the whole game in Dragon's Dogma 1 that you can typically port to. So I'm kind of like, why have I got these fairy stones? I'm not going back here and I don't need to go there. It's literally, you go back to the capital city after you hit your max carry weight.
Yeah.
But then when you get these port crystals, in, like you start placing them in the world and it's emergent, right? It's like, what's important to you as far as your playthrough goes? Like, I had one, I think we both had one, at like the Sphinx Shrine in Dragon's Dogma 2. Because I'm like, well, I'm coming back here a few times.
which was funny, though, right? Because then immediately, when you finish that segment of the Sphinx quest line, you're just like, oh, I need to get that poor crystal back.
Yeah.
Like, if you just, because I mean, I know myself personally, I forgot to grab it after the Sphinx moves on. And then I got to like an hour later. I'm like, I need that crystal. I don't need it there anymore. I need to go climb back up there and get it.
Yeah. Or you know, do you spend a completely useless fairy stone to teleport to the fourth crystal and then carry it back? And you're like, well, I could walk and then I'd keep the fairy stone. I feel like, you know, microtransactions aside, I feel like there's a really good balance in the availability of things like the wake stones to resurrect people, the fairy stones. Wake stones always feel like a really harsh like resource. You don't get an extra life just for free. And having to need to... When that dragon hit Vermund in your game and killed that main character captain and you had to burn a wake stone to bring him back to life. God.
So yeah, that's another thing. I don't think I actually brought that up with Joel last week. If I did, well, I'm going to do it again. I mean, it can happen anywhere, basically. Like, monsters can attack anywhere. That includes settlements and, like, these capital cities like Vermund.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there was just one warning. I know you were the first one who found out because you walked out to, like, a Cyclops or something.
Like, Cyclops smashing up. And I was like, all right, neat. Come here a minute.
And I was like, cool.
Free discipline.
I'm kind of looking forward to waking up to a Cyclops in my city. No, I wake up to a dragon.
Yeah.
And he's just like, by the way, all these, like... It's kind of cool because you're in there, your pawns are in there, all the guard are in there.
All the traveling pawns.
Yeah, it's like, let's get it. Yeah. It's like, this feels like how I'm going to win. It fled, of course.
Yeah.
But not before killing, the captain NPC who I've been turning in all my quest progress to. So I'm like, I guess you get a wake stone, you lucky bastard.
Yeah.
I saw another guy who was just like, ? I'm like, sorry. I don't know who you are, so you're staying dead.
Yeah, until someone tells me personal. To come and get you. Because the game will let you do pretty much whatever.
Yeah, I was going to say, please tell the story of how you found out the hard way.
Yeah, I had one, clearly just a manufactured scenario. The writing's not A+, but it's like, you turn up and you meet your, I guess your best girl, in most scenarios, who's trying to do all the right things by her village, and the emissary from the queen, who is the antagonist or the secondary villain of the game. The emissary from the queen is like telling her, oh no, you've failed due to treachery and treason and your own incompetence, and we're going to arrest you in the morning. And then he storms out, and that's usually your cue to like, oh, we better have a last night. And I'm like, well, you could just run away. Like that. But I thought, no, you know what? I want to see what happens here. I've had enough of this guy with his foppish gold hair. And he was walking around and I ran over, and in the power of being the only main character in the game, I picked him up and I ran him over to a cliff and I just yeeted him, as the kids say.
And that's the thing, right? Even he is at the mercy of you being a main character. Yeah, he's like, yeah. I don't know what to do. Because he's just an NPC. So like, when you put him down, he's just like,
know who I am?
Oh, tries to keep walking. Yeah. And it's like, no, I'm picking him up again. He's like, all right. Yeah. I can't do anything about this.
Yep. And then just straight off the cliff into the ocean he goes. And that was it for him. And then the quest just didn't progress because they needed him to talk to come and try to arrest her.
And that's great. That's such a cool moment. But again, like, it's fun that the game lets you do that.
Yeah.
Which obviously gives you the get out of jail free card of like, well, you can go back to
the mortuary.
Yeah, essentially, the mortuary, and cash in a wake stone to bring that NPC who you hate and is actively working against one of the characters you like to bring them back to life.
So I had to go to like the mortuary front desk and be like, and then she'd be like, who are you looking for? And I'm like, this guy. And they're like, I'll bring the body out. That'll be 5,000 gold. I was like, all right, here you go. And then they brought him out and put him on a slab, and I ran around the mortuary till I found his slab, and there he was. Cashed in a wake stone to bring him back to life, and he got up and his cheeks had the blush of maximum affection. I was like, I hate this man so much, and the game's probably going to decide that I'm going to marry him by the end. Which
so good. And then the especially funny part about that was then you had to go back.
I had to walk back
to the town
to watch his cutscene. And then if you think my grabby hands weren't twitching watching this guy walk away again, he's only safe because I don't know where, like, if he's going to come back up.
Yeah, well.
But I do know where he lives because I robbed his house.
And again, it is moments like that that it makes this game so fun. Like, it's not perfectly polished. It's got a fair amount of, like, jank.
Yeah.
Which is funny, right? Because this is a Capcom game. This is their big game for year.
Yeah.
And
it's still great.
It is still very good. It has flaws, but like I said, that's why last week I was talking about the ups and downs. Like, there are moments that frustrate me so deeply.
Yeah.
But then I have cool moments that just wash them away, make me forget all about it.
Like, there's the time that I spent 25 minutes trying to kill a golem as an archer, and the golem refused to lift its foot where the last metal was.
Smart of the golem, like, honestly.
You damage all that. You have to defeat these monsters in all different ways. You have to destroy all the metals on this golem's body. This one had one spawned on the underside of his foot, and he's just like, I'm not lifting it. If I don't lift it, I can't lose. Come here.
All right, fair enough.
So eventually I just sort of took enough damage from this extended attrition fight that I had to bail. And I was just really quite fed up with it. And then later on, my archer vocation progressed to the point where I had this attack that shoots like 100 arrows that bounce around the room, and I found myself in a cave with a chimera and just one shot it because it was trapped in there, like in a blender.
And it was the one you needed to keep alive, wasn't it? Because the guy's like, I want to get poisoned by this chimera.
Yeah.
And we're like, all right. Ooh.
It was a quest-related chimera that I failed the quest, because you can never have something just good in this game. There's always a bitter aftertaste. But yes, it felt sweet to watch that thing just liquefy in front of me. Four health bars just like in 4 seconds.
Speaking of stories, I actually had a moment happen to me the other night where I was... there's some pretty cool trophies you can get in this game, but related to certain things that can happen in a game. Like, for example, the one I'm going to talk about is the Cyclops Bridge. Yeah. I found a Cyclops perfectly... It was sleeping on a broken bridge. I could see the gap right behind him. Like, excellent. Wake him up.
Yeah.
I'll knock him on the bridge, and I'll cross across him to get that trophy. So he wakes up. Me and my pawns, like, beat him... So he's staggered, and then we nudge him over the edge.
Yeah.
He falls down, obviously creates a bridge by grabbing the other side, his feet on the other, my side of the bridge. I'm like, excellent, time to go across. And I jump onto him. And as I'm in the air, I watch Bradford, who was my main pawn, who's now like a two-handed like warrior, just slams his sword into his troll's foot. And then I just watch the troll fall, and I'm just like... Well, I guess I'm going down too. And of course, there was a lake beneath us. It was too deep to swim in, so we got brined.
Yeah.
And all I could think of was, fuck you, Bradford.
Thanks, Bradford. He's always there for me.
I bet he felt real good. I bet he's like, look what I did.
Yeah. Ooh.
It's going to come up.
Now, I'm the risen.
It's going to come up in my performance review, isn't it? Bradford, my pawn, has a certain amount of disdain towards you. I'm not sure why.
He does. I don't know why. He hates my guts. He's perfectly helpful and everything, but I don't know whether it's a personality type you picked, but the times that I'll select him and I'm like, I'll help out my mate Karen, I'll hire his pawn and kill some Cyclops, help his progress towards the Cyclops badge. Bradford's like, what ill fortune that I should suffer you twice. I'm like, fuck, man.
What?
I can pick anybody else.
You're just a pawn.
Like, you'll be just doing stuff. And you'll be like, here's some minerals. I need those to upgrade my armor. It's like, you're well fond of picking things up. I'm like, stop it.
He just seems like he's really critical. But the silver lining is he does sound a bit like Matt Berry sometimes with how he delivers his dialogue. Yeah. So I kind of forgive him.
Yeah. What's that? Look, master, a treasure chest.
Something awaits us above.
Above.
He's quality. Your pawn's much nicer. Elena's a much nicer pawn.
She's pretty genuine.
She unfortunately died in my dragon fight because there was a point towards him where it was just like Nuke City. And I would get my pawns up and then they would die. And then at one point I was like, I've got everyone up. What, I'm missing someone? And I was just nowhere.
Yeah.
I'm just
gone.
It's like, all right, deleted. But at least like I go back and get her and she's like, hey, yeah, wow, sorry about that. I'm like, hey, that's cool.
Yeah, that's cool.
I imagine you don't get that from Bradford.
No, I don't get that.
Always like, he has a big whinge about it.
If I need something from Arlene, I'll like wave her over and she'll be like, and I'm actually looking forward to it because I've just reclassed her over into like my white mage. And because she's always just like, of course, master, let me help you out with that. I'm sorry about that. We're all learning together. And Bradford, I'll call him for a heal when he was in his white mage phase.
Yeah, I was talking about it.
He'd come over and he'd be like, if no one else is going to do it, I suppose I must. And I'm like, shut up. I'm the boss. Like,
you don't get to speak to me like that.
I paid for this game. You work for me.
Anyway, that's my gift to you, was my asshole pawn Bradford. A name that I don't even know. It was just, I was trying to think of a name for him, and I think that was a random option that came up. And I was like, Bradford.
That'll do. Lock it in.
And honestly,
Fantasy Brad.
He feels like a Bradford.
Yeah, he does. He feels like everything about him is a person that I would not enjoy being around. But he's been present for like 90% of my game time.
He's just in this game.
There's like one sequence where I lost him. Because again, this in this game, just having dynamic interactions that will just do your head in. I had to found a Rift Crystal. Cool, got a new pawn. Sweet, I'll pay a little bit extra. I'll pay a little bit of these Rift Crystals. So I've got thousands of them to get an overleveled pawn so that they can really bring some powerful magic. Let's go. Rolled off, wrecked my way through some goblins and some saurians and hit this cliffside path going out into the wilderness. I'm just like, I can't wait to see what's down here. I love the way this world, every time you come around a corner, is something different. Let's go find out what's down here. And there's this ravine on one side down to like a river way down. I have no idea if you can get there. And then just like a cliff, like literally a cliff on the other side. And we made it about 5 minutes along this path, killed everything in front of us. Harpy flies down, picks up Bradford, drops him off the cliff. And I'm like, well, what? Are they allowed to do that?
Is that legal?
Is that legal? Like, is that... Because I can't get... He's just gone. He doesn't have a health bar anymore.
He's gone. Just gone.
And then they came back around and they picked up Arlene and put her down the hole as well. And I was like, but that's two. You can't... You have to let me fight you at some point.
Harpies under a winning strategy.
Yeah, and the Harpies are just like, this is how we win. This is how we do it. And then, so I turned around and I ran back. Well, I tried to continue and I found some of the pawns on the side of the road who were just like, Arisen, yes, come, allow me to lend you my sword. And I'm like, yes, I'm down too. I desperately need someone. And the game does not let you hire a new pawn if your pawn is down. And Arlane's never been, if your main pawn is out, it's to stop you, I guess, from like brining your main pawn and picking up three overpowered pawns, right? Yeah. You've always got to have your main pawn. Your OG. So I had to turn around and walk all the way back, and I came this close to losing my sorcerer as well in the same way.
Oh my God.
But in the end, I was like fighting them off and everything, and then this terrible vision overcame me of like, what if a harpy grabs me? And I just ran. I just ran. I'm like, nah.
Because they'll do it.
Because they'll do it. They'll pick you up and they'll just lug you.
Especially if, like, that's probably those bigger, like, lion-faced harpies. Those things are assholes.
Big ones are like flying, I don't know, they're like quadcopters.
They're jerks. Every time I see them, I'm just like aggressively not fighting
you. I miss the ones that just sang that made you go to sleep. Exactly. That was easy. Yeah. The ones that knocked your party members out and put them to sleep, no worries.
Yeah, even the ones that poison you, not a big deal.
That's fine.
But those ones, I hate the ones that just
have big muscly legs and just love picking you up. No, put me back.
Yeah, some of the stuff you can run into in the world is pretty. Like, the way it can use just the rules of the world against you is fun, and also it's great when you do it, but it sucks when they do it.
Yeah.
But I also like little habits like that pawns obviously pick up, and this was a feature in the first one. Like, sometimes I'll wonder who Bradford was with that taught him to, like, just sometimes pick up an enemy and just throw it off a cliff. I'm like, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, why not?
You know what? He probably learned it from getting thrown off a cliff by a harpy. Probably just, like, falling down there taking notes.
He's like,
I'll use this for my own master.
Brian.
Yeah, Brian. I will say, like, the world feels like, and I've read stuff about this, and it's, in some ways, yes, if you're... Like, it's very close to having just, like, a D&D campaign where just chaotic shit happens. You've got to rely on other players who kind of know what's going on. Maybe they know more than you. Maybe they've been in this area before. I know there's a treasure chest behind this wall. I'm like, I don't think you should know that. Like, I think you've been reading ahead, mate. But also in that the monsters will do shit like they'll throw an oil flask at you. And then a different goblin will come and you're like, oh, you're doused in oil. And then another goblin will come at you with a torch and you've never felt fear. Never felt fear like that.
The way the enemies can deal. And even just like the bigger monsters, the dragon that I was fighting, at one point, it just grabbed me and then just slammed me into the ground. And I was just like, my body is broken. I truly knew what it felt like to be Théoden King.
Yeah. You feel like if you can imagine, like, being swarmed by kittens and stuff, and if it's life or death, like, they do stuff that you would do to get rid of these goddamn kittens. Like, get out of here. Fuck off, kitten.
Yeah, like, the Cyclops sometimes will just, like, it's just, like, I think it's the, or is it the, whichever.
The ogre, the
that
furry one.
That focuses on the women.
Yeah.
And then with some, like, I remember very early on.
Yeah.
One of them grabbing Arlene and just booking it. I'm like, no, come back.
They just run off. They'll grab one pawn, run off with them, and then try to eat them around a corner somewhere if they can get some privacy.
That's my friend's pawn.
Yeah. She's good.
She's on loan.
She's helpful.
Take Bradford.
I don't know if there's as much in this one. I know they put in a bit more variety, and obviously we've talked about Bradford's turn of phrase and everything. It doesn't, like, the first Dragon's Dogma had partly because of the amount of time I spent in the world and partly because it was so repetitive. The lines are just embedded in your head. They just sink into your soul.
Tis weak to fire.
Tis weak to fire. I'll lend thee lightning's kiss. And all of this shit. But like... and you know, Masterworks. Oh, you can't go wrong. Every time you stop past the,
I wish there was something like that from Ian Keeper here. I do miss Masterworks. All
yeah, Masterworks. Oh, you can't go wrong. But there's also, I'm very keen to see like what the end game in this is like, because I've just diverged from my own topic. The end game in Dragon's Dogma got wild. Like, there was a whole... Spoilers for Dragon's Dogma, it's a 15-year-old
game. You've had time to play it.
You've had, like, 13 years.
Capcom gave you so much time.
Yeah, and they released it twice. but even in the original Dragon's Dogma, there's a hole in the middle of the main city that, like, carves out all of these areas that you would have gone previously, and it's just literally a massive fucking pit. And the inn and the blacksmith where you get Masterworks all are like right on the edge. They're like a footpath width away from it, and you rock up there and the guy's kind of like, Masterworks all. This massive pit, and then you literally just throw yourself into it and pick it, like land on a balcony on the way down, and if you fall far enough you come back out through the sky and then you keep falling again until That's you land amazing. On a balcony. Like, it was called the Everfall, and it was great because it's you go in there and then you've got this random wild encounter with sweet loot on your way till eventually find the right door that'll progress the main story. I'm really hoping that Dragon's Dogma 2 does some wild shit like that. The relationship between the main dragon, Grigory, in Dragon's Dogma 1 and the main character, myself, was really interesting. And again, it does feel like the only main characters in the game, the only living characters in the game, are you and this dragon.
Do the dragons show up much in the first one?
Like, he was there at the start, obviously.
Yeah.
And then you had two encounters with him through the game, usually where he'd be like, nah, not strong enough.
I was finding it interesting, we haven't actually met the dragon, at least at the part point we're up to again.
Yeah.
But again, we don't know how far we are in the story because of how the story is structured. So maybe I'll do the next quest and he'll be there. But I am curious to meet up with that dragon who stole my damn heart at some point.
I want it back.
I wonder how he's
doing.
He
just like ate it up. He just like snacked on it like a Tic Tac.
I do appreciate the other the dragons call you out when you're nearby.
Yeah,
I'm not sure if that was a feature in the first one, but it is very cool.
They are chattier in this one, but they would definitely you could speak dragons because you were the Arisen.
Yeah.
So you would like come around the corner and you'd hear a dragon say like Arisen, and you'd be like, ah, dragon.
I was up, yeah. Like you in this one, your chest glows and the screen sort of starts getting a bit weird and like it's like, oh, it's a dragon calling me out.
Yep.
I feel like I got to fight him.
So he's going to take a piece of me.
Even being pursued by the dragons when they suddenly decide like, oh, well, I know you're running from me, but what if I just cast magic? And you're like, please don't.
Yeah, what if no? I haven't seen it in this one, but I do suspect it's in there, potentially some of the later dragons. In Dragon's Dogma 1, they could command your pawns. They could like pick them up. They would pick them up and like cast like white magic on them. And then when they put them back down, they fought for the dragon.
Oh, God.
And you're like, it's a 2v2.
I mean, it wouldn't surprise... Like, we do... I haven't encountered it yet, but there is that infection. They are actually nerfing it a bit in the next patch, I think. Which I'm like, I don't know. I wish I could kind of experience it.
Yeah, I wonder how much more of this game I should have played by this point. I feel like we've put a fair bit of time in.
That's the thing, though. I've got no idea. And I kind of like that. I kind of like not knowing where I'm at. Like, you check the... Because obviously, we're playing on PS5. And for games... Again,
the predicted progress.
It's like, this is the percentage you completed. This one still says 0%, which means that the percentage is probably tied to, I guess, like the main story or the last quest or something. But yeah, basically the game's like, man, you haven't even started. I'm like, I put 40 hours in.
Yeah,
I've covered a large portion of this map.
Yeah, I feel like I've done 2/3 of the map and 2/3 of the vocations.
Yeah,
like I've done everything except any of the vocations that involve hitting things directly.
That's going to pay off for you because those ones are fun.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to that. I'm just finishing up Magic Archer. It's the other thing that I find a little bit disappointing about this game, but it's the way the game's built. And it was the same problem in Dragon's Dogma 1. Just when you hit peak in your class and you're like, this is awesome. That is the most optimal time to change and to nerf yourself again. And that's pretty frustrating.
It is. And I guess like... Capcom would be like, well, you don't have to. But it's like, yeah, no, but I do.
But every time, I don't have to, but the longer I spend on this, that's DCP going, that's like discipline going begging.
I'm just like burning
everything,
it.
Yeah, everything I fight is something I could have fought leveling up my next class.
And especially because like that last rank takes time.
Yeah.
So when you finally hit 9, you're like, oh, I'm at max power.
Yeah.
Oh, time to change.
Yeah. Well, yeah, all right, I'm at max power. Time to go back to the vocation rank, get my level 9 skills. Oh, these are great. Are you going to use them? No, I'm not even going to leave the building. Make me a level 1 fighter.
And all right, time to go shopping and spend about 50,000 gold on new gear.
Yep. Take this all off, just dump it in the street. so that's just a weird quirk of the game design. Mm. Like, it's really cool how you can be every class, but the way you revert back to one... It's just the optimal way to do it. There's no reason to stick around.
I kind of wish there was like a... Obviously, you've got the vocation levels. I know you've got like your character levels up and there's like minuscule little slight stat increases. I wish there was more from that. But so you felt more powerful from that level up process. So that going back to level 1 didn't feel like you were just essentially starting the game fresh. With a larger HP pool.
I will say at like, you know, at level... Well, we're going to be level 40s.
I think we're 40s,
Yeah, mid-40s. I definitely feel like the fights are easier at as a fresh level 1 archer or whatever than they were literally at level 1. The weirdest thing to me is just like you get the encumbrance increases because like your carry weight increases fairly randomly with a game with so much to pick up and so many crafting materials and every monster you kill
and lots of walking
you're going to be picking stuff up all the time. Every time you see a cave, I'm like, well, I better see what's in there. And in that cave, I really want there to be a chest, and there will be. And in that chest, whatever's in there is coming with me because I'm not coming back.
I mean, if there's minerals in the walls to mine out and stuff, and then whatever monsters drop, and sometimes you don't get them. Sometimes your pawns pick them up.
Yeah, and put them in your inventory sometimes. Yeah, like, I got you this, master. And you're like, ugh. And then,
thanks.
Yeah, or alternatively, you know, you'll be getting the loot off the bodies and stuff, and one of your pawns will end up going like, you don't half enjoy picking things up. I'm like, thanks, Bradford.
You gave this to me.
Yeah. Do you want to help? No, you're a wizard. You don't pick things up. Okay, that's fine, mate.
No, he's more at home pointing out ladders.
Yeah. Look, a ladder.
Yeah. Woo.
I also enjoy what it's doing for old English adoption. I haven't heard the word ought in anywhere near like anywhere
now. Now, how much would you say you've heard it?
I've heard ought a lot. I've heard it a lot, like
every second sentence.
And this isn't like O-U-G-H-T, meaning we should do that.
Yeah,
it's A-U-G-H-T, meaning something. Perhaps there's ought above. Like you can say something. It's fine. I get it.
Yeah,
it's fun though.
It is fun. Like I said, it's a game of ups and downs. The ups are pretty good though.
The ups are pretty good.
It does cancel out a lot of the lows that I've experienced. Yeah. It's just like the moment to moment is very fun. Even if sometimes you'll feel super lost and like you'll wonder if you're even doing the right thing. Just stick with it. Who knows what's around the corner? Might be in the town. Might be a cave. Might be a dragon with 8 health bars will just like nuke you from across a river. Who knows?
Yeah. And you might just need to like run. Panicked with you and your one pawn that survived back to anywhere that looks like safety.
Just mashing the to me option on the D-pad.
Yep. Come here. Leave him alone.
Stop picking fights.
Like calling your dogs back to you at the dog park. Like, get over here.
Help.
And then you'll like be over-encumbered and out of stamina and the night sets in and you've got to try and claw your way towards a campsite or something and things come at you out of the dark because you've got 9 feet of visibility.
Really love what this game does for nighttime and video games. Like, it makes it a specific kind of scary. Like, it's intimidating. But even then, like, as you get stronger, it feels good when you're like, no, I can go out at night.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I'll go out at night.
I'll fight some skeletons and some zombies.
Do I need to camp? Well, it's late. It's getting dark. But I've still got plenty of health.
Yeah. So. And my backpack's pretty empty.
Yeah. So, no, I'm not going to. We're not napping. We're going out hunting. See what we can find. And that's a really good feeling to get out there and explore the place at night because it's genuinely scary when you start.
The amount of times I've been like running jump kicked by like a minotaur.
Oh my god!
Because you'll hear a sound, you're like, the fuck was that? And next thing you know, is it's a minotaur drop kicking you across the map. You're like, okay,
and then
cool.
DualSense controller speaker just goes goosh with that sound. That means that you're in a lot of, like, you're on 10% or less.
It's bad news.
Yeah. The game is about the journey in, like, every respect. In leveling, like, it's about getting to rank 9. You're not going to spend any time at rank 9. You're going to switch off immediately and start your journey again. When you get to a town, there's probably going to be 2 shops to visit there, maybe an inn to sleep to reset your health bar, and there's not going to be any villagers that are super worth talking to.
There'll be lots of ladders.
Hidden treasure chests and stuff. Hopefully a pawn crystal to replace your pawns that the harpies put in the river. But then you're going to immediately, like, it's safe, it's going to be secure, you're going to spend your gold, and immediately you're going to be like, let's get back out there. Yeah. Where are we going next?
Yeah, they've done a really good job of it. And the more time I put into it, like, the ups have outweighed the downs.
Yeah.
So I'm very happy with Dragon's Dogma 2. I hope to finish it. I don't know how far away I am from that.
I've already, because obviously you're not allowed to enjoy things on the internet.
No.
I've already seen things about true ending and all of that. So I'm like, okay, so maybe there's a New Game Plus system.
Maybe.
Which I would look forward to. I'd love to go through. I know I'm looking forward to trying out the Warfarer system, where you've got...
That's a mix and match one, isn't it?
Mix and match, where you can just... That's pretty much your end game, where you pick up all your skills and equip them however you want. That looks fun.
That's what I am excited for as well. Although, like, I still miss the Mystic Spearhand.
Well, and that's the other thing, right?
I'm
looking forward to playing the Mystic Spearhand, because, again, I have never hit a monster. I've done the mage, the sorcerer, the archer, the magic archer, and I'll probably do trickster next just because it seems weird. But then I've still got thief, warrior, fighter, and Mystic Spearhand. And the Mystic Spearhand looks like the shit.
I really, as much fun as it was doing it early, it was that exact experience, right, where you hit rank 9, you're like, oh no. No, I'm not, no, but yeah. I want to keep cricket batting enemies across an ocean.
Yeah. Like, nah, you hit 9 and then you can bank half of your class XP or whatever you earn towards your next one. I don't know.
I usually, what I do when I max out a rank is before I change, I'm like, I'm fighting something.
Yeah.
So I just like run out of a city and find something to fight, which works really well in Batal because there's almost always a griffin nearby who's just like, I'll fight you. You come down here.
Yeah, come here a minute.
So that's something I've tried to do. But otherwise then, it's straight to rank 1. And all right, what have I got? One ability. Okay.
I love what they do with the Maester's skills, where they give you that, like, the ultimate skill for the class has to be earned. Some of them are real, like, they almost all seem to be really easy to get, where you literally just have a conversation with someone, maybe do one thing, and they're like, yep, you seem deserving of my ultimate skill.
The thief one was fun. I like that you get a decoy one first is good.
Yep.
I mean, you get the real one, and it's essentially just fucking Ultra Instinct from Dragon Ball. Like, you activate it, and you just auto-dodge attacks until your stamina is depleted.
These skills are all anime as shit, like the magic archer one, where you sacrifice your own health, and depending on how much health you give up is how many, like, of these radiant arrows launch, and it's like a carpet bomb, like it's insane.
True Vegeta style.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm
just like making it energy attacks.
Yeah. And if you're just one griffin or something in that area, well, I'm sorry, because the campsite right
there,
I'm having all this
back. Sadly, if you're a massive target, bad day to be you.
Yep. But yeah, really enjoyed it.
That's good.
Great so far. I really want it to have the replayability that Dragon's Dogma 1 had. It's not going to have Bitter Black Isle level, because that was DLC.
I do wonder, though, because they obviously would have made this with the knowledge of that DLC existing. Yeah, like, so part of me does want to just Google Dragon's Dogma 2 endgame, because I'm curious to see what's at the end, what's the hook, or is it literally just like, all right, new game plus, do it again.
Yeah, everything's harder.
Yeah,
like,
it's fine if that's the case.
All the enemies are the upgraded versions of them, which admittedly that was part of the new game in Dragon's Dogma 1. You'd go through and it was the Nightfall mode or Dark, I can't remember what it was called, but it was just like everything was tougher. And it sucked, but you were also like a killing machine.
You probably maxed most of your locations at that point. Yeah. So it's like, bring it. And then I guess you get to finally play with them.
And then you pop over to Bitter Black Isle and do the Dark Arisen content and come back with just insanely overpowered gear and just smash your way through the story for a couple of laps because it's fun. Then one other thing, honestly, that's stuck with me since the first Dragon's Dogma and the Dark Arisen, obviously Masterworks all, Too Sweet to Fire, all of those things. There's this one part at the very end where you find out that at the bottom of Bitter Black Isle is where this guy went when he wasn't arisen and he didn't want to do it. So at the end of Dragon's Dogma 1, if you do be the arisen and you go and you essentially fight God, usurp God, like all JRPGs.
Yeah,
like all good JRPGs.
Any good JRPG, yeah, it's a staple. Yeah.
You fight God, you usurp God, you become God, and then roll on to the next game. But in this, like, the Dark Arisen is one who didn't want to do that and he fled. And you follow him and he's continued to grow more powerful and he's just this hulking demon figure now. But he's also, like, his last area is filled with pawns. Like, oh, and they're filled with pawns that he's, like, enslaved, basically, to defend his throne room. And they're, like, as you're defeating them, they're just like, I would have fought forever by your side, Arisen.
Oh,
and you're
God.
Like, you've got no choice but to kill them. But that those lines...
It's effective.
It's so effective. Like, by your side, Arisen! And as you're just like, arrow bomb him to the face or whatever.
Imagine that in Dragon's Dogma 2 with Bradford.
I would have fought by your side, Arisen. Honestly, if it's not Matt Berry, we need a Matt Berry porn voice.
Absolutely. We need more Matt Berry.
Yeah.
We'll probably not talk about it, but I've been watching Fallout and we got to the Matt Berry episode and just lost our minds.
Instantly. I'm defeated instantly by him.
Yeah. Anytime he speaks, I'm just like, oh.
I was talking to our friend Ben about it earlier because obviously he's also instantly defeated by Matt
Berry. Yeah. Who isn't, honestly?
But the double standard for it, because they'll come out, you know, we'll get the media announcement, will come out and say, oh, Chris Pratt cast as this.
I know.
Like, oh, him again. He's just his voice. It's Chris Pratt's voice doing Chris Pratt's thing. Whatever. And it comes out and it's fine.
Yeah.
It's like, it's fine. But we're immediately derisive of it. Matt Berry cast as this. Excellent. Fantastic. Let's
go. And, you know what? Don't even do a voice. Just be Matt Berry.
And he just bees Matt Berry. And you know what? It's fine. I love it.
You know why? Because he's really good at it.
Because he's really good at it.
He's the best at being Matt Berry.
He's the most devious bastard.
In New York City. I love Matt Berry. But moving on from Dragon's Dogma 2, what else have you been playing? Is there any other games you want to bring before we talk about, there will be Destiny 2 discussion at the end of this episode? That's a heads up. Before we get there though, what else have you got?
We'll call you for the early ending of the episode. Yeah. You can consider it done.
That's why I thought I'd put it at the end.
What have we got? We've done, obviously we've played some Helldivers, really
so
enjoying
good.
That. It's just like, shit, they've just smashed it. They've smashed this out of the park. I can't believe Helldivers 2 is... Helldivers 1 I really liked. No one would play it with me because of the friendly fire thing, but I just thought this is such a cool game.
I want to be clear. It was a combination of a friendly fire thing and the top-down isometric view, okay?
Yeah, they're not compatible.
This still has friendly fire, but I can see.
Yeah.
I can look around and be like, oh, I can actively get out of the way of that.
Yeah.
Not like when it's top-down, it's just like, oh, I'm shooting over your shoulder. Cool, I'm dead already.
Yeah. And there's like, you have 4 seconds of warning of anything coming. Yeah. Fair. But there's been a couple of things that I've been putting some time into. One, I sat down the other night when you were at a concert. We played through some Planet Crafter, which has just hit 1.0 on Steam. It was pretty chill. Like, it was
nice.
A chill, good time. It's your typical, you know, you land on a planet, you craft yourself a backpack, craft yourself an oxygen tank so you don't die immediately, get the silicon, get the iron, you know, make a chest to keep your shit
in. The essentials.
The essentials, every crafting game. But what was really interesting about it is, A, the crafting system is like intentionally simplified. So you've got 12 slots in your backpack. You pick up iron, that's one slot. It doesn't stack, but none of your recipes. If your recipe needs 2 iron, it's just 2 iron. Like, it's not going to be, you need 64 iron
okay,
and 35
good.
Titanium or anything.
I do like that because that is a problem that, I mean, most crafting survival games have.
Yeah, just like endless complexity stacked on top of each other. The other really interesting thing about this game is that yes, you've got, you know, you have to make sure that you can survive, but the actual goal of the game is to terraform the planet.
Yeah.
So like the ultimate end game of the highest upgrade of your oxygen tank is taking it off and you don't need it anymore.
That's a goal to work towards.
Yeah, but it was really satisfying being just a chill, slow sort of game where we are setting up drills to release, you know, 2 iron and 1 titanium. Pick it up off the ground, build a drill, put it down. Done. Do it on the spot while you're exploring. The key thing that really kept us going was watching that as the oxygen pressure or whatever rises, the sky starts to turn blue.
That is neat.
You start
That's really cool.
You start to hear wind. Like you start to hear, like the world slowly seems more, and it does start out like my partner was complaining while we were playing, being like, "I really hate. There's no enemies in this game. Why does it sound like an alien movie? Like, why is it just this creepy, oppressive, well, I guess mysterious
if
music?
If it's a dead planet, it would.
Yeah, and that's what I'm like. I'm like, well, it's because it's got to be A. It is a threatening place to be. We're not supposed to be here yet. And B, I really hope they change this music, because that's gonna change the vibe as you progress.
Yeah.
And it did seem to, because I mean they stopped complaining about the music, so it must have changed. I didn't notice because I was too busy watching the sky turn blue. And then
as you terraform the planet, does wildlife begin to?
You have to introduce wildlife to it because it doesn't come out of nowhere.
Sounds really good.
Yeah. And then the other thing that
I'm coming around on this game very quickly.
The other thing that we found that was a little bit worrying is we'd built this base, you know, we had our crashed landing pod and stuff, and we built the base outside it because everything was pretty central. And then we got clouds. We got clouds. We had built a nuclear reactor. We're up the tech tree, which again is not too difficult to do. You just build off what you've built before.
Is the idea that you do it across multiple planets, not just the one?
I don't know.
Okay,
because we were only like halfway through one planet,
and there's also only 1.0. So
yeah,
it'll probably get expanded upon.
And then we got through to this point, and we're like, okay, stage one, blue sky; stage two, clouds; stage three, rain. We got clouds. I was like, this is beautiful. I love this. And then there's rain. We got a notification saying, you know, an email saying, you know, okay, you're working towards rain. And we'd built a lot of things by this point, so we're watching the progress bar just like churn up. And I'm like, well, if it wasn't 11:30, we could probably knock this out. This is going really well. And then the progress things warned us that water will accrue in low-lying areas, and I looked around where we built our base. And I was like, this is going to be a lake, man. Like,
oh, no.
We are going to need to pack this whole thing up, and we're going to need to rebuild the whole thing up there. So next time I play, I'm going to think ahead.
And not build a ditch, essentially.
Yeah, basically, literally like a ravine.
Yeah.
I was like, this is going to be beautiful when it's all green. But we got up to the stage where we had machines outside that would spray water and stuff in a circle, and they created on this red dead planet. We had gotten to the stage where we had a blue sky and we had circles of grass.
Nice.
I was like, this is sweet. And then we would have all drowned. So yeah,
as intended.
So that was really good. I definitely recommend looking at checking it out if it's up your alley at all. It is, I really like the chill vibes of the game. There's very little pressure. Unless you build in a ravine, and then you're like, okay, well, we've created our own this is our own problem now, because we're really like we're progressing really quickly, and I don't know if we can get all of this packed up and moved before the rains come. March,
the rains are coming.
The other thing that I played is again, within our friendship group, you have games that you can attach to people.
Mm-hmm.
Most people, like, you probably find, you know, this person really likes driving games. This is the Mario guy. This is the Metroid guy. This guy likes Souls-likes.
Look, you described most of our friendship group.
Yeah, pretty much.
And the overlaps.
And the overlaps, absolutely. Like, we're all complex people.
Yeah. You can just label us.
Yeah, you can just
label us. In that way.
There's a category of games that we have that are called Brendan games. This one came out, one like a quintessential version of it is like Falling Frontier, which is coming up hopefully this year. I don't know, maybe next year. Sort of PAX Rising. Look, game looks amazing. Check it out if you haven't already. But this game that I've been playing just hit Games Pass. It's called Terra Invicta. And it is made by the guys who made the Long War mod for XCOM 2, the kind of people who look at XCOM 2's modeling of an alien invasion and think, this could be longer, harder and more complex, and then they put a lot of work into doing that, and then a bunch of people play it and say, this is awesome, I love how it's so much longer, so much harder and so much more complex. So they've basically made an alien invasion simulator of this off the back of, it feels like if you played XCOM, the concept is familiar. There's like a spaceship crash, and then your secret agency notices it and you choose how to respond to it. The difference being that there's about six different secret agencies. They all have different ideas on how to approach it. So you're actually playing against different secret societies. So there's a bunch of... Yeah, so you're not America or, you know, Europe or whatever. You're the... like the Institute, who wants to use the alien technology to advance human technology. You're the servants who want to sell out to the aliens and think that we should all be on the same side. Like they're clearly superior, so let's get on with them. Or you're the resistance, where you are, nope, we are going to kill everyone who has anything. We're going to kill all the aliens, and then we're going to kill everybody who, like, who sides with the aliens or thinks we need to the aliens for help or anything. They're not, none of them are, they're super radical. So there's like a spectrum of these people. What was the other interesting one? There's like your middle of the range one. I can't even remember what they're called now, because they're basically the middle of the range, which is whatever it takes for us to be a free Earth. There's a side that's just like, we just need to be strong enough that the aliens will respect us, and then we can become part, like work with them instead of against them.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's like 6 or 7 factions. So your early stage of the game is literally you recruit agents, influencers, celebrities, diplomats, officers, whatever. Send them around the world to investigate this crash site, try to do this, try to do that. You know, generate positive press for us. And then eventually you start taking parts of government. But you might have to control 3 or 4 different sort of control points. There is a very hard control point cap in how much you can control. So in my game, I managed to actually get in and wrest control of the United States. So I was like, took a little bit of save scumming. I had to reload a couple of times, but like I got one good roll on it, and then the next, and it's all in real time. So this is not a turn-based game. It's a real-time game. So you commit someone to a job. They're there for like 9 months, which doesn't take very long in game. But then if you want to re-roll that, there's your 9 months gone. But again, once we got in there, I captured some points in Canada. And because I had, built a good reputation in Canada, they got a bonus towards it getting into America. Once I got into America, I could get their media on side. And it just like sort of rolled from there. There's all these little levers you pull. And then once I was in America, I'm at the point where, oh, you've gained command of 4 American military battalions. I was like, sweet. So then you can start playing it like a strategy game if you want, and actually controlling like where their production goes and where and all of this. And then I made the mistake of, I was like in a good position. I'm like, no one else has got a whole country yet. They've all got bits and pieces here and there.
And you had America.
I had America. So I'm like, well, I can't. I suppose I can't lose. And I should probably just find out what I need to do next. Shared tech tree as well is a really interesting idea.
Oh, okay.
So whoever contributes, there's like 4 different fields of science that get researched at once. Whoever contributes the most to that field gets to pick the next thing that's researched.
Ah.
Yeah. So it's like this really interesting, I can sponge off their research for free. Like I'm going to get it anyway. But if you get this, then the research tree for the planet is going to trend towards your objectives. In a way. So it's going to definitely be one of those games that helps if you know what's going on rather than trying to learn it on the fly, which is where I'm suffering. But the biggest mistake I made in this game was I used my mouse wheel and scrolled out. And I discovered that you scroll out from the Earth and there's orbits because you can deploy satellites and hubs and space stations and stuff. And then you can deploy stuff. You can build colonies on the moon. And then I scrolled out some more and there's a fully realized solar system with Lagrange points and an Oort cloud and Delta V. Like you need to, if you're launching something from one planet to another, eventually, because you're going to build eventually you build a space fleet to fight the aliens. But from wherever you're coming from to wherever you're going can be really easy or really hard depending on where the planets are in their orbit. And I was just like, I love this game. This is amazing. I'm stepping away right now. I'm like, I need to take a minute.
That's about to be an investment.
That is going to be a massive investment. And it's literally like the game warns you when you start. It's like, this game can take 100 hours to come to fruition, to complete a campaign. And I'm like, that's fine. I've played 100 hour games before.
I just spent 100 hours playing Final Fantasy VII Rebirth.
Yeah, it's fine. Like, don't even worry about it. But at least Final Fantasy VII Rebirth was, for the most part, the same game beginning to end.
That's true, yes.
Whereas I've just mastered, like,
you were feeling pretty good.
Yeah, I was feeling pretty good. Good wiggling my way into this one country. I'm like, oh, this is a really strong start. And then I scrolled out and was like, I don't know how to build a nuclear pile on Mercury. Why would I do that? Why is that important? But apparently it is, because it's an option that you can do. So, yes, really good game. If it's your cup of tea, if you liked XCOM, if you like your 4X games, if you like investigating things that are the games that should be spreadsheets, is the category I'd probably put this one in. But overall, it's cool. Like it's a very good
and
thing
on Game Pass,
and on Game Pass, so you can try it out for free. It's got a lot of buzz around the people who, as you can imagine, the people who enjoy this game really enjoy this game.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of buzz about it online. I was able to find lots of really helpful guides and tips for progressing, but definitely it's on Games Pass. Give it a shot,
Game Pass,
man.
Like best value in gaming.
You find yourself, you wake up and you go, I feel like I've got 100 hours to defend.
And I don't like JRPGs.
Yeah, I don't like JRPGs. And Dragon's Dogma sounds weird and scary to me. I want to look at a screen for a while and like nurse a cup of tea while I wait for something to happen. This is the game for you. I bought Chaos Gate Demon Hunters, which is the Warhammer 40K XCOM game.
Oh, okay.
I've been looking at it for ages, finally got a good sale. I was like, bought it. And I played it for a few hours while you were playing Midnight Suns.
Oh, yeah.
Both of us were playing two divergent XCOM-likes.
Well, mine was probably XCOM Studio.
Yeah, it was, but mine looked more like XCOM. Like,
yeah, true that.
As I was playing it, I was like, this is exactly XCOM 2, but yours was by the XCOM Studio and had cards and shit in it.
So weird. Yeah. I haven't even talked about my experience of that game yet, and I don't even know where to start. Cool game, very budget.
It's got cards and shit in it.
It's got cards and shit. The cards, in the end, I got used to them, but like, every time it was like, yeah, this game's kind of cool. A cutscene we're playing, like, this game's got a bit of a, you can save a budget.
Yeah.
But honestly, pretty solid. It's on the Plus, the PlayStation Plus second tier, like the game library. Yeah. Not the Max one, which is a ripoff. Don't do it. Don't be a fool. Especially if you're Australian and you don't get the cool PS3 benefits that we don't get over here. Just get the second tier and you can play that. But yeah, it's if you're hungry for some Marvel, it's actually pretty fun. It's also just fun to see some, especially with the prevalence of the MCU and how that's sort of become Marvel. I know the comics are out there and everything. All that
I've
stuff
heard they
there.
Have comics.
I've heard there's comics, but like really, I would say like the MCU has become Marvel for the majority of people.
Yeah.
So this game is kind of fun to see like different combinations.
Yeah. Like it looks good. I played the free demo on it. I think it was a Steam Fest a little while ago that they had it available. I played the first 2 hours or 3 hours of it, and like it's fun. I would go back to it. It very much feels like like Fire Emblem Free Houses.
It is exactly that. Because like you've got the XCOM style strategy, but then you've got all the stuff at your base, which is a very Fire Emblem. Running around, hanging out with your fellow heroes. Doing your social links, training with them, doing research down with like Stark and Strange and stuff, but yeah.
So I played a little bit of Demon Hunters. It looks great. Like, I really like, there's a lot of environmental stuff in it that looks really cool. Like, you can push pillars over on enemies and stuff. The other really cool thing is that you have, like, X amount of action points, just like in XCOM. But if you do something cool, like if you get a critical hit or you kill two enemies at once or something like that, your whole team gets an action point refunded. So you can actually go from, this is going really badly, to steamrolling like that entire encounter by just chaining these things together.
I do like the idea of being rewarded for doing something cool.
Yeah.
That's a good idea for a strategy game.
Yeah. And like giving it to the entire team means that even if you have, you're like, yes, I've pushed this pillar over and killed three bloodthirsters. That's awesome. Time for an action point refund. And it goes to someone on the other side of the map that can't use it, but everyone gets it. So it also encourages you to be a bit ballsy, to set yourself up,
you know,
assuming something's going to go your way.
It's funny you mention it because the Marvel game has a similar feature, right? Where some cards will have a thing called like, it's like quick play or something where the best example, like Blade's got this cool like multi-hit attack where he like draws his sword and like slashes 2 to 3 people.
Blades them up.
Yeah. And then basically the card's like, cool, if you kill someone, like we will refund that point and the card will be sometimes just put back in your hand.
Yeah.
It's like, you can just do it
so
again.
So you can just use it to chop your way through
Which works really well because how that... No, I'll take your time here.
Yeah, you're right.
But how this one works is you've got the enemies are either one hit kills, or they're like they've got health bars. So it becomes a fun game of like finding a way to use those multi hit cards to dice through the single hit guys to set yourself up for the big health bar guys.
To just clean them out.
But again, it's similar thing where it's cool to be rewarded action points for just taking a swing.
You know what? If you enjoy playing the game, your reward should be you get to play the
game.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. Absolutely. Oh, and the only other thing that I've put time into recently is that just insane Command & Conquer bundle.
I can't believe it. I feel bad for all the indies that got screwed over
by
EA's being like, and a billion Command & Conquer games.
For like $13.
Yeah, just swallowing the charts.
Yeah.
But I did buy it, and
I immediately bought it. I was looking, I had a pop-up, and I went, what? And then I went to Steam, and I went,
when
what?
When you told me, I didn't believe you. I had to come in and look at Steam myself. I had to boot up my PC, which I only really do for podcasts nowadays, and was just like, holy shit, he's not wrong.
Yeah.
Bye.
Tiberian Sun, bye.
I wanted Tiberian Sun on Steam for so long.
So yeah, then I went back and played through the entirety of Red Alert 2 and Generals, both of which just... Red Alert 2 holds up, man. Like, there was that weird glitch that I had to, in, like, the second last mission where the game just just crashed on me. But there's a fan patch available for it. And it just... That game just holds up. It holds its own in every category. I need to get back and give Red Alert 3 a go. Just only for the cutscenes.
Yeah, only for cutscenes.
Only for the cutscenes.
It is... I found it to be a bittersweet experience as I was going back through Tiberian Sun, because it's so good to have him back. Man, I just get so mad at EA for not only what they did to Westwood as a whole, but like specifically the Command & Conquer series.
Yep.
Because Command & Conquer 4...
What the hell?
Absolute piece of dog shit.
Yeah.
I don't know what they were thinking.
And then, you know, now we've got Command & Conquer Rivals,
the mobile game. I'll never forget when that was wheeled out at E3, and it was like, no one wants this.
No, nobody asked for this.
No one wants a Command & Conquer game on mobile being promoted by watching these two people go head-to-head with shoutcasters. No one wants that.
No. I've never wanted that.
We just want CNC.
Yeah.
Again, I'm happy to take either Red Alert or like the GDI versus the Nod conflict at this point. And what's the name
Joke
of the...
Joke Yukon is Kane. Put Joke Yukon is Kane in. That's mandatory.
It absolutely is. And what's the composer's name?
Frank Klopecki.
Frank Klopecki.
Yeah.
Just bring the music.
Yeah, those three things.
And the Tiberian Sons, right. Like his band.
You can literally get Joe Kukan as Kane, Frank Klopecki as the Tiberian Sons. The rest of the game's optional.
Yeah, like, just, you can just build from there.
You can build from there. Like,
just don't do what Command & Conquer 4 did. Just don't do that, and you should be okay.
Yeah, you're going to need...
And 3, I guess. 3 was a bit of a misstep as well, but whatever.
But... Like the fact that these game release made such a splash,
yeah,
a massive ripple, and then everybody picked it up and played Command & Conquer for like a week after that. Where's, I mean, I almost don't want to say that take the hint, because then we're gonna get a modern EA Command & Conquer again.
I don't know if they can do it again with the studios they've got left. I don't know who you would put on it. I don't know, because like, BioWare's barely managing to get a Dragon Age out.
Yeah.
The other team, like, DICE obviously is very much focused on Battlefield. EA Motive did that Dead Space remake, but apparently didn't do very good. And
A shame. I played it and I loved it, but the whole time I was playing, I was like, ooh, I'm looking forward to Dead Space
2. Yeah,
I'm
like, I'll buy this in support of a Dead Space 2 remake, which apparently now they've said that the Dead Space IP is on ice again. I'm like, no, but you just bought it back.
Yeah. God damn it.
It's Dead Space 2 is right there.
Yeah.
I promise you, you remake Dead Space 2, people are going to be very happy.
Yeah, yep.
So I don't know. I don't know.
That forced mandatory multiplayer.
Oh, yeah, that was in 2.
Yeah, you can drop that. That's fine.
You can absolutely
save it.
Drop
if
that.
If that's the part where you're like, oh, we can't afford to do this again, don't worry about it.
Yeah, just whatever the budget was for that, just cut it.
Yeah.
Just drop it. Yeah, I don't know. I would love to... Obviously, to have a new Command & Conquer would be awesome, but I don't know... Because the other thing as well is like... They'd have to find a way to make it work on console.
Yeah.
I feel like for a EA, a PC-only release, not on the menu.
Yeah. And it's not like there hasn't been dozens of Command & Conquer killers or like Command & Conquer spiritual sequels or games made by people who are like, why aren't they making Command & Conquers anymore?
Yeah.
And then we can't really remember any of their names now.
I remember Crush Kill Destroy.
Oh, yeah, Crush Kill Destroy.
KKD.
Oh, that was in the golden age,
I know,
right?
Yeah. That was KKND. Cashing in on the hype.
Yeah, and getting your research building and using it to upgrade one of your other buildings, and the announcement is Building Now Smarter. I love that game. Crab with a rocket launcher on the top.
They're both on Steam.
Oh, okay.
I look at them occasionally and go, should I buy a KKD? Either on Steam or on GOG. They're on one of them.
Yeah, they're definitely on GOG.
I always float past them like, no, I bought a lot of CNCs on Steam and I barely play them, so I probably shouldn't buy KKD.
KKD. And then, of course, like, the... StarCraft was it for, and then Age of Empires has just come back.
I really need to find more time to play 4 because I really liked what I played of it.
Mm-hmm. No, I think I absolutely agree. And there's been a bunch of reworks through it recently to make it make all the sides a bit more balanced. I don't know what I'd want aside from Joe Kucan and Frank Klepacki. I don't know what I'd want. How about just like a HBO series?
Sure.
Sure.
But only film, only shot at the quality of like Tiberian Sun.
Yeah, only Joe Kucan is a professional actor. Yeah. Everyone else is like part of the
and
set.
It's all very poorly green screened.
Yeah, yeah. Because I'm fairly certain the GDI general. The GDI commander from Command and Conquer was literally just a sound guy.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, and he just looked, good, just looked like good in the suit, and they're like, all right, guys, get behind there. Oh, the scrappy Westwood days.
Yeah, I miss them.
Miss them.
Miss them so bad, but sadly they're dead. Thanks, EA, for nothing, as always. Mm-hmm. But hey, I want to believe in that Dragon Age game from BioWare. Please be good.
Please be good.
Please be good.
You owe us.
Please. In a post like Baldur's Gate 3 world, I just want a good Dragon Age game. That's what I want.
I also feel like that's probably what was behind Dragon's Dogma's like NPC interactions and stuff being like fine.
Yeah.
Because you'd look at, like, you can imagine Capcom looking at Baldur's Gate and being like, no, we're going to put more work into this.
That's, no.
Look, we're at a 4 right now. $4 million later, we're still going to be at a 4. So we're just going to call it.
Ship it.
Yeah. Good enough.
Flip
off that ogre.
Is that all you've got to bring to the table?
That's pretty much it. That's what I've had time to play, yeah.
Yeah, well, that's good, because now we're arriving at the Destiny portion of the episode. So, recently, as part of the desperate bid to fill the last couple of months before Final Shape drops in June, mm-hmm. After the delay, but Jason Schreier leaked it, and Bungie was like, nah,
don't be ridiculous.
Nah, it's not happening. And then 2 months later, like, it is happening. Sorry about that one, guys. The season of E4 was only 3 months, is now like 6 or 7.
Ooh. Which, honestly, I don't mind.
It's
like,
been nice.
I do like a long season. It's been I got tired of Season of the Haunted, but I really liked having no pressure.
Season of the Lost was the one.
Was it Lost?
Yeah.
Where we Yeah.
But
yeah.
That's
right. Haunted had heaps of pressure towards the end of it because
we had to grind out.
Because I had to grind out the last ranks and everything and do so it many sucked. Of those friggin'.
It wasn't fun.
Yeah.
I got so sick of what was a fun activity initially.
Yeah.
Towards the end of the season was just like, I can't wait to never do this again.
Yeah. Yep. And then immediately I did never do it again.
Never. It was there for like the next 2 seasons. I'm like, I don't need to.
Yeah, I'm not touching it. No.
Sorry to everyone who's like jumped in late and has like bought the season pass and is like needs to like blast the rest of seasons.
Yeah.
I ain't helping you. Nah. I've done my
time. Enjoy the scythe.
It's fun.
It's really cool. Once. Yeah. The first 100 times.
Yeah,
was
but
really
after
cool.
that, it becomes a bit less cool.
Yeah.
And you figure out that just using your Kalos mini tools more effective.
Yeah.
But yes, obviously I had to fill in the last couple of months. So the solution was to give Destiny fans what they've wanted for a long time. And what speaks especially to us is I added in a horde mode called Onslaught as part of this Destiny 2 Into the Light. Sort of this like this campaign to sort of obviously keep people who play Destiny 2 happy. But it feels like a way where they're really trying to get people in the door as well for this big finale to the Light and Dark Saga. Obviously, we are partial to a horde mode.
Yeah, love a horde mode.
We are all obviously partial to Destiny 2.
Yeah.
In the sense that they've already hooked us, so we're in.
Sunk cost fallacy.
Exactly. So when they're like, all right, we're putting a horde mode in Destiny 2, naturally, I was like, well, obviously I'm spending time on this.
Yeah, all right. I'll give it a shot.
Not to mention as well, they've thrown in, there's a bunch of new guns that you can get. They brought back some cool ones. All this other stuff that people who don't play Destiny don't care about. Honestly, you won't care if you don't play Destiny, but it is a cool thing, and like if you started playing it, you'd probably like them. But that's not how we're going to sell it.
Interesting with some of these new, like these guns coming out, like the Brave Arsenal, being so many sunset weapons and weapons with really interesting combinations. It's got the same. It feels like it's got the same purpose as when World of Warcraft brought out their first expansion. There was a lot of talk on the forums of like, Blizzard, you have designed yourself into a corner. Cataclysm's coming out, and you're going to have all of the players entering at the same time. Some of these players are hardcore raiders, and some of them are super casual. How are you possibly going to balance these two power levels? It can't be done. You have created a rope for your own neck, Blizzard. And then Blizzard's just like, okay, we're just going to, like, the opening area of the expansion will drop gear that is as good as raid gear. And off you go from there. And everyone on the forums, shut the fuck up. Like, because it's just like, and done. You get this ugly looking gear that is as good as raid gear. So your stats are back up to power. And then the raid guys go on and do the Cataclysm raids. Fine. Everyone's happy. Easy.
And that's so, sort of, that's sort of been how they've been. Destiny's done it for a while. But, yeah. But it's just, it works especially well because, yeah. Some of these weapons are weapons that are sunset. So what that means for people who don't play Destiny is that if you had them back when they first came out, you can still use them, yep. But you can't pull them up power-wise. Their perks are outdated. They don't get any of the new stuff. So they brought them back. They refreshed them, gave them a sweet coat of paint, attached like new like lore to all of them.
Yeah.
And which you'll find out when you play more of it. I have done some solo grinding in it with randoms. Each of the new weapons as well, when you get it, is tied to a character. When I got, what was it? I think it was, maybe it's been the Mountaintop, which is essentially just a breech loading grenade launcher that fires a micro missile.
Go on.
You can use it to rocket jump. It's not very effective, but it's fun. I think it was that one. It was either that one off of Midnight Coup, which is like a cool hand cannon.
Yeah.
When I picked it up and got it, and one of the quests it gave me was like, go talk to the Drifter. So basically, it sends you out to all these characters who have story importance, and they have like, obviously it's not voiced, unfortunately, I guess because of budget and like time frame, but they actually have like a little spiel the character gives you, and they talk about like, they give you like some story updates and sort of get you hyped up for this big culmination that we're literally staring down the barrel of in a couple of months.
I'm keen,
but I... Onslaught.
Onslaught, yes, let's roll it back.
We've got to hand ourselves. Talking about the weapons that people who don't play Destiny don't care about. Horde mode in Destiny. It functions as you expect.
Kill the guys, get the stuff.
Yep. Here's a point, defend the point. Guys are coming, make them stop coming.
Yeah.
You can build defenses like turrets, decoys, and trip mines. You can upgrade them with the scrap that you get as you kill things and play the game, play the mode. Every 10 waves, there's a boss wave. Where you actually get to, it happens twice in the set. They basically divide it up into set, which is 10 waves as a set. You go into the pyramid ship, which is like the boss's arena.
You teleport into their starter
structure. Basically, they're coming at your home, and you basically bounce into theirs and go, hey, stop that.
Yeah, you cut that out.
And basically, that's a set. Then you get a loot reward, and you do it again. So there are a couple of different ways you can do it. There is like a 10 wave, like a single set version you can do. Then there's a 50 wave one, and then there's a legend, which is like hard mode 50 wave. They are revamping a lot of stuff with the legend mode to sort of pay out more loot. Basically, they want to make it because there has been this, as always with Destiny.
Yeah.
Destiny players play too much Destiny.
Yeah. And they optimize all the fun out of Destiny.
And they optimized it down to the fact that the quickest way to get loot was just like do 10 waves and bounce. And it's like, that sucks, but I get it. Because it's more rewarding. So that Bungie's like implementing a bunch of fixes this week to pay out more loot and make those 50 waves more rewarding. But the basics is you defend a point and it's fun. Because Destiny, I've said it with Joel, I feel like we've said it. Anyone I talk to about this game, it's like Bungie make the best shooter. They just do.
The gunplay is just awesome. It's
so good.
Like, and you will naturally, we talk about these weapons, these perks, these things that you will naturally find. There is so many weapons in this game that you will naturally just gravitate to and adopt guns that you like the feel
exactly.
of. And there's like a gun for everyone,
man. It really is. Like, a lot of the problem Destiny had early on, and it doesn't really have it as much now, but like there's like subsets of the Destiny fan base that are like yell about these god roles and all that sort of stuff. Like, these are the roles that we want for these guns. But I do appreciate there are more and more Destiny, like, players coming out. Like, just play with the weapons. Like, you're going to like them. Like, generally, Bungie pair perks up nicely. They may not be perfect perks, but they usually do work in synergy a lot of the time. And obviously, when you get that role where you're like, I like that perk and I like that perk, and you put them together, it's fun. But all of that just services this amazing gameplay loop of just shoot, like... Horde modes are pretty simple, right? There's nothing that new or refreshing about it. But if the gameplay of just gunning down the enemies is fun, then the Horde mode's a success.
Yeah. And like it really encourages you to, like, you can go whole ham on your, like, you can shoot things and have fun doing it. Or you can climb into your build and tinker around and be like, all right, how can I kill as many things as possible.
If I want to kill 20 enemies at once, how do I do it?
But then how can I do that back to back to back to back? Because I went the other night when we finished the 50-wave set, and like that was honestly... I honestly didn't pay attention to what the loot payout was like, because I was like, oh my God, we finished a 50-wave set.
It was fun.
Awesome. And I went to bed, and I was lying in bed, and I thought to myself, like my brain brought back up the score screen from the end of it, and it was like 800, 900, 700 kills. And I was like, did we kill like 2,500? And I had to like wake Quinn up and be like, did we kill 2,500? Was this what the numbers were? And they were like, yeah, I'm pretty sure it was. And I was like, oh my God.
That's so many dudes.
They killed like so many dudes in that horde mode. So like they absolutely just pour the enemies on you, and it is incumbent upon you to not only destroy as many of them as you can as quickly as you can, but to be able to do that consistently.
Yeah.
Like, because you will have a bit of a break between sets. Like, you have either a few seconds to upgrade stuff or you get your boss set.
Yeah.
But you generally do need to be able to... Like, you can't be a one and done. You can't be a glass cannon, or you can't just Nova out and destroy. Like, you can vaporize 10 guys and be like, man, I'm amazing.
And then he's
20 more. Shit. We're not done with you.
So, and that's one thing I want to talk about as well, because I am a sucker for the lore of Destiny as well. I think Bungie have created this... It hasn't always been consistent. Obviously, Lightfall... Mm-hmm. And some of his seasons after that have been disappointing. But overall, since Destiny 1, transitioning to Destiny 2 and building upon that, they've made a really interesting world. And this universe and characters and races and factions and all that sort of stuff. And I am a sucker for stakes.
Yeah.
And it is cool. Like, we've had this moment since Lightfall, since the end of the season, just before Lightfall, where the Traveler left Earth and basically moved into low orbit, essentially. Which led into Lightfall. And since then, we've had like our allied fleet around the tower.
Yeah.
But for this whole year, I've been like, what is he going to do? He's just sitting there? There doesn't seem to be anything happening on the planet. Yeah. Like, I don't know what you're doing. And like, now
it's costing money to have you guys out of port.
You're just like... sitting there. Do something. But now we have Onslaught has dropped, and like the enemy factions have actually, they're attacking. Like, so there's three maps you can pick from. They're all, two of them are like PvP maps repurposed for this mode. And the other one is like just one of the large sort of patrol zones on old Russia.
Yeah.
But it is really cool to be on these old locales, essentially, and like look up and see like the pyramid ships.
Just hanging there.
They're here.
Like a Rogue One scale of Star Destroyer.
Like pyramid structures like built into these maps that we've had for years. And it's like, that's not right.
Yeah, you're not supposed to be here.
You're not supposed to be here. So it is actually... It is honestly getting me pretty pumped for the final shape.
Mm-hmm.
I really hope they don't drop the ball. It seems like...
It's probably the most optimistic I've been since Witch Queen.
Witch Queen, which was the last one that they had to delay, and it paid off because it was good.
It was great.
There's been a whole bunch of announcements for the final shape, but I won't go into too much of. But the new subclass coming, actually, because Onslaught is sticking around after final shape drops, I think... Shaxx's little hallway of champions is going away.
Yeah.
But the mode itself is staying. Which means when we get that new subclass in Final Shape, which is like prismatic, where you get to like mix and match from all the existing ones. Can't wait to start running in through Onslaught with all those different like perks popping off.
Yeah, your defensive perks and offensive perks from different trees just to optimize. Like,
it's going to be fun.
Awesome.
I feel like, I know you always feel like you're in a cult when you're talking about enjoying Destiny 2. It's like, I feel like it's in a really good place now, I promise. But
I have people that say, what did you get up to last night? I was like, oh, I did some Destiny 2, and they're just like, you watch them die. watch them turn off. Or like, there's one guy I know who visibly goes,
that's fair. Yeah. And I get it. And I'm not going to like twist anyone's arm into playing it. But again, I'm a sucker for a horde mode ever since. We always lament it. Mass Effect 3's multiplayer.
It
basically rewired my brain.
Yeah.
For what I want in a multiplayer mode. Yep. It's like that. I want that, but in I don't care what.
Yeah, I don't
except,
care.
Except Dragon Age. Don't do it in Dragon Age.
And then they gave it to us in Dragon Age and I was like,
I said I didn't want it.
Yeah. I told you.
God damn it.
And even they gave it to us again in Mass Effect Andromeda. And we're like, no, this isn't right.
You've ruined it somehow.
I don't know what you did to it, but this sucks.
Something is not good about this.
It had really bad starting classes. That's what it was in Andromeda. It was just like, I don't want to play any of these.
And I guess that's why it works for Destiny, right? Because it's like, these are your builds that you've had for like for some people, 10 years.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, do what you play with them, mess with them, like, bring whatever weapons you want. It's actually, it's going to be really useful, I think, players are talking about using it for, like, just seeing how effective their builds are. Yeah,
because there's always dudes at, coming at you. So that's actually a really good point. It'd be a great, like, a, like, forget the gun range in the, like, the forge.
Yeah.
Just come, like, go and jump in Onslaught. Combination and jump in Onslaught.
Pick one of the tight maps, there'll be enemies for days. Yep. Just in tight little streets and corridors and stuff.
Of course, like, I did see someone's already completed the 50 waves on Legend Lost Sector solo. I'm just like, oh my god.
One of the guys, I think his name is Kodiak on TikTok. He does those, like, those Attenborough, documentary TikToks about the Destiny zones. Yeah, so he's done a Legend 50 wave Onslaught solo run. I'm like, okay, the idea of doing that terrifies me. I don't know how you did it.
I don't know.
Like, I think they, like, because basically, essentially, when you get to a boss wave, like, you can swap your build freely.
Yeah.
So, because you have infinite time there. So, that's, I think, they've got builds for the waves,
yeah,
and then builds they swap to for the bosses, and that's sort of how they do it. But also, I know how much damage gets put out in, like, Legend difficulty stuff. So, they're also just good at the game.
They're just really good.
Yeah. Must be nice.
But overall, really enjoying it. Definitely looking forward to final shape. I'm very excited for the linear storytelling model.
They're bringing in. I think it's gonna work really well. Just the idea of, like, boots on the ground being like, okay, we're inside the Traveler.
Yeah.
There's the bad guy. Get him.
Because Destiny, as much as we love it, The storylines are almost always, here's the zone, go to the zone. Yeah. It's all these patrol zones for you to explore. There's bounties and stuff. But then you're going to talk to someone. They're going to give you a quest, like, and you're going to go and the story mission will start.
Yeah.
Right. And the story mission will be either part of a dungeon or part of a patrol zone or something, because these are beautiful maps and it's a shame to only use them once. So I'm looking forward to it being this, like, linear, purpose-built campaign that you progress through.
It's actually very exciting.
I feel like Bungie haven't really had the opportunity to do that since, like, Halo.
Yeah, and yeah. I wonder if that's full of, like, what they're reaching into for this one.
Yeah.
I'm not intending to use reach there in purpose, but it could work anyway. Because, like, there's a lot of question marks about how it's all going to end. They did announce a raid date being essentially the week of launch.
Yeah.
Which made a lot of players go, what the fuck? Usually it's like the week after.
Yeah.
But then they also said that the reason for that is the episodes, which are replacing seasons, which I'm sure most people at this point have either tuned out or they've glazed over.
Yeah.
But seasons are out and episodes are in. And what that means is essentially instead of four seasons for a year, at least for this, because again, there's rumors of plenty about a Destiny 3 coming down the line, which... Please, Bungie. I know there are people who are like, I better be able to carry my progress across. No, just wipe it clean.
Yeah.
Because honestly, I don't even know. I can't keep track anymore.
I have 700 guns in my vault. I can't.
I never use them.
I don't know what to do with
them. And then they're like, it's okay, we'll give you 100 more slots in Final Shape. I'm like, no.
No, you need to save me. I don't need more room. I need you to remove me from this situation.
Just nuke it all.
Put me in a new game and tell me the old one's gone. I hate it when Ubisoft did it. If you could get away with it,
I would give you a pass.
Yeah.
So episode storyline can't start until, like, the Final Shape stuff is resolved, and that's kind of exciting.
Mm.
That actually makes me look forward to this new sort of approach to seasonal storytelling, because the seasons as they exist now are fine, but it's just like,
you're kind of treading water. You can't progress anything materially until the next expansion or whatever. And even then, sometimes it's like, it's still not a dramatic, like, I don't know if Lightfall progressed a great deal. They brought in Emma Guffin and then Emma Guffin does something, but they could have done that in a season.
Like, well, because there's plenty of rumors that, like, Lightfall's like was meant to be a stopgap. It's like, we got to do some filler. And it feels like it. It feels like it.
It does feel like a bit of filler.
All the seasons sort of feel like filler. Even if they've been good sometimes, like the Eris Morn season was good.
Yeah.
Again, ended up being inconsequential, I think. But we'll see.
Yeah.
But again, and I don't want to give them too much hype, because it could just, even though it sounds like it's going to be new and different, it could be the same.
Yeah.
All I mean is that I'm excited to see what it's going to be like. And I haven't really felt, even though I've been playing Destiny 2, sometimes just on autopilot, prior to Into the Light. Into the Light I'm enjoying. But, like, I think since Lightfall has been largely just autopilot Destiny playing, where it's like, all right, log in, do my progress, do my 100 season ranks, get all my cool transmogs, bounce. It's good to feel excited about it again. Hopefully they can stick the landing, because if they need to.
Yeah, they need to.
it's been a bad time to be Bungie. Marathon we have no date for. So there's been so many people who are like, well, probably Destiny 2 will end after Final Fantasy. I'm like, are you kidding me? It's their moneymaker.
Yeah.
It ain't ending. I don't know why you think that. Remember what happens, like, once these three episodes end, we're either getting another expansion or another Destiny, like, it's happening.
Yeah, yep.
Marathon doesn't have a date. So it's nice to be excited about it, and the Horde mode is, again, it is repetitive, as all Horde modes are, but the moment-to-moment is fun, and it's super fun. Punchy and snappy.
Yep, yep.
Love it. Enjoying it. Looking forward to jumping back in, because they also are trickling out the weapons week by week, which I know some players hated, but I like it because it means I can come back next
pressure,
week
right?
to do
you can
like
just pop
50
back in
waves.
Later on and do another 50, yeah. See what you get.
But I do have every intention to grind out that super black shader. I want it.
Yep.
And that's going to be a grind. But that's fine, because Onslaught's fun. But yeah, that's for Destiny 2 talk. If you're still here, thank you. This is where we're going to wrap up the show now.
Yeah.
So if you left earlier, or maybe
you're already gone.
You're already gone. Doesn't matter.
I hope you had a productive 25 minutes.
I hope you had a good time.
Yeah.
As always, thank you for listening to this week's episode of the Dialogue Options Podcast. We do appreciate you lending us your ears. If you want to follow us on social media, you can find us across Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, where we are just Dialogue Options. Any sort of support you can throw us there is good. But more importantly, whatever podcast platform you listen to us on, any sort of thumbs up or stars or shares or reviews that you can leave us means a lot. Normally this would be where I would plug our Twitters, but I know you don't use Twitter.
No.
And I don't care, so I'm not doing it. No. So I'm lining up a person for next episode. Spoilers. I'm bringing back Jesse. We're probably going to talk about the Fallout show, because he's watched all of it, and now I'm nearly finished it. And it's relit the Fallout obsession around the world.
Yeah.
Which I was talking about, again, with our friend Ben, about how unfortunate it is that there isn't a new Fallout game out to play.
Yeah.
So it seems like everyone's just going back to 4 and 76.
I will say, I looked at that trend for 4 and 76. I downloaded 4, had a quick look at it. I was like, this isn't really what I want. And then I found the Better Beginnings mod on New Beginnings mod on Nexus,
yep.
Which combines Fallout 3 and New Vegas into one thing. And then it basically rebalances all the content so that, like, your DLC weapons, like the holo rifle and stuff, are available sort of further around than just having to go all the way over to New Vegas.
Mods are so good.
Yeah, and I'm like, well, you know what? Again, they're both on Games Pass, the Ultimate Edition and the Ultimate Game of the Year Edition of New Vegas. So I'm going to give that a crack.
I instead just bought the Season Pass of Fallout 4 and just re-downloaded it. There's a next-gen patch coming. It's fine. It'll be good.
Yeah.
But yeah, so look forward to me having Jesse on here. He'll talk about how much he hates playing video games now and how much he loves the Fallout TV show. Until then, have a good one. Catch you later.
Dialogue Options Podcast.